Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down.
Cruise, man. Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys can get in your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put it down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Hey, welcome to another Parents Called the Parents Network. I am your host, M.H. Scott, here on Blog Talk Radio. And as always, we're going to promise you some great information this evening, folks. So if you haven't had a chance to pick up your pen and paper and pad and pencil and things like that, to take some very copious notes, you're going to take this time to do that now, because once we get started, we're moving full speed ahead, because we got some information for you this evening that I think is going to really and truly be an eye-opener. As always, we try to provide you with information that will help you and your child be successful later on in life. Whether or not your child is heavily involved in playing sports at the middle school, high school, or collegiate level, or professional level, or whether or not your child is just pursuing a career in the sporting industry, you know, we can provide you with some information that will definitely be a positive plus for you each and every time. Well, Blog Talk Radio seems to be experiencing some kind of difficulty because they're not letting me log into my my page here to take a look at what's going on here. And hopefully it will let me log in so that way we can connect our guests this evening and at the same time get you on the line as well to answer and entertain all your questions. If at any point in time you want to call in, you can always give us a call at 917-98095. I'll say that number again, 917-889-8095. That's the call-in number for this evening, folks. If you want to join in on the conversation, you're more than welcome. Feel free to join in on the conversation, because this information and things that we provide here on the Parents Coach Parents Network, it's all about you and it's all for you. It's not just something that we come up here each and every week and just sit around and shoot the breeze or just put bogus and false information out there. This is the information that we're trying to share with you so that you, as a parent of a student athlete, or you as a parent of an athlete, you know, and I like to use that term, just athlete, or better yet, our children, you can better be able to serve them, guide them, support them, nurture them, mentor them, and at the end of the day, be their biggest advocate. Because it's so important that we as parents are the advocates, the biggest advocates for our children. It's not the responsibility of the high school coach. It's not the responsibility of the college coach. It's not the responsibility of the middle school coach. It's our responsibility, folks, our responsibility. And each and every time we're here on the air, we like to make sure that you understand that so that you as a parent get something out of it. You as a parent are able to share something with your child later on. And in the end, strong bonds are formed through you having a better understanding of what your child is going through or what your child would like to experience. Because if you don't understand the whole entire sporting industry and the process that comes along with it, then you're doing your child a very, very, very serious disservice. It's not an optional thing, folks. It's something that's truly a must. And if you can't do that for your child, then trust me, you're you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, I'm still trying to filter through here and see what's going on with our switchboard. We can't get to our switchboard, and this is kind of bothering me and it's puzzling right now. You know, because I always like to hear my man, Mr. Keith Wright, play his little piece before we bring up our guests, but I may have to resort to another means and try to backdoor our little system here. I'm trying to do it the legitimate way and get this show rolling the right way. So please be patient, stand by, bear with me. And look like we finally got through to the switchboard. Now, if it shows my call being on the network here, then that'll be even great. Not sure exactly why it's not showing my call. It's not showing my call. It's not showing the call of my guest. So I am kind of puzzled right now. What's going on here? Blog Talk Radio, when I called in, they stated they was having some problems with their show page, and I hope that's not the case, because I really and truly want to get this show rolling. Well, I'm really getting to the point where it's starting to become a little frustrating, because I'm not sure exactly what's going on here, and their help desk is not always available. Let me see what we got here. Please bear with me, folks, as I try to get through to the help desk. Again, if you want to call in, you can always reach us at 917-889-8095. I'll say that number again. It's 917-889-8095. Okay, let's see what's going on here. I'm kind of upset right now because I know we have some good information that we want to share with you. And why is it so that on a day like today, when I know I got the show of all shows prepared for you, for your, and I wouldn't even say entertainment pleasure, I would say reality check, when I have this information readily available for you, now all of a sudden now we're having difficulty getting to our switchboard. So, on that note, I may even at some point in time just totally log off, shut the station down, and then come right back. And if that's the case, I will let you know, and we'll come back with some type of solution. Either we'll come back with the show has been canceled and we have to reschedule, or we'll come back with a solution, and the show will be ready to rock and roll. But until then, I'm going to give you my man, Mr. Keith Wright's song anyway, just for your entertainment.
Thank you.
That was my man, Mr. Keith Wright, and he said he's making smart cool. He's making smart cool. Keith is a graduate of the University of Harvard. Yes, I did say the University of Harvard, the school where who attended? Our current president, Honorable Barack Obama. Mr. Barack Obama. Keith Wright is a graduate of Harvard. And, you know, it's funny because at one point in time, I believe I've even heard the president make reference to similar words, those words being making smart cool, or it's okay to be smart, or being cool or being smart is cool, something along those lines. So when I heard them echo those words, I was like, okay, we got something here. We got something we can work with. And just so happened, Keith used those same terms, same verbiage in his little piece he did for us here on Blog Talk Radio. And we truly appreciate that. We truly appreciate that. Well, right now I'm trying to log back into, back in and see what it gives me this time as far as our show page pulling up and everything else. And seeing whether or not we're going to be successful in making this show happen this evening for you. Like I said, I really and truly hope that we are, because I believe there's some information this evening. Oh, we're hot. Okay, I'm going to run Keith one more time, folks, while I talk to our guests, and then we'll be on the air with you shortly.
What is the NAIA?
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Well, I guess everything else seems to be playing for me except for my little jingle there, but that's all right. That's all right. Well, we do have our guest on the line with us this evening, and it's Mr. Everett Glenn, CEO and founder of National Sports Authority. And I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about that later on in the conversation, but I want to make sure he's on the line with us. Everett, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Glad to hear you this evening, brother.
Not a problem. Glad to be heard.
Okay. Hey, that's always a blessing. We got a number of folks out there that's listening to us this evening, so hopefully you're going to come share some great insight with us and some things that you've been doing with the National Sports Authority and other little pieces that you have floating around out there in the sporting industry. That's going to be an eye-opener for our listening audience this evening. I'm going to let you go ahead and start off wherever you want to start off, sir.
Okay. Well, for those of you who I guess I should qualify myself. I've been an attorney for 36 years. And during that time, I've had the opportunity and privilege to work with about 40 professional athletes. There are those who would consider me to be a pioneer in the industry based on the fact that I was the first black attorney to represent multiple first-round NFL draft picks in the same year. And I did that twice, actually. Excuse me. And I was also, the first attorney/agent of any ethnicity to represent multiple first-round draft picks in the NBA and the NFL in the same draft year, and I did that twice as well. Nowadays, you have guys who say they're basketball agents or they're football agents, And I'm reminded of what Clark Kellogg, who was one of my first clients, when we went to visit Clyde Drexler in Houston when he was coming out. And when he saw Clark, he asked Clark whether he played power forward. And Clark says, "I just play forward, man." Okay. And I play power, small, or whatever. So I did both of them. I represented NBA players. I represented NFL players and was the first guy in the history of this whole game to represent multiple guys in the same draft in the same year and guys in NBA, NFL in the same year. I went on to represent three guys who are in NBA, NFL, Hall of Fame, guys who were members of their team Hall of Fame, like Gil Bird, who's a member of the Chargers Hall of Fame, lottery picks, all pros. And so I know a little bit about what has happened in the business of sports since 1982. And result of what I have learned, where I come from, who I am, I've changed my focus from representing individual players. I no longer represent individual players. But the nonprofit that Mike spoke of is to provide help to all of our young men and their families. What I found is if you're an agent, then the only people that want to deal with you are your clients. The other kids that you might be able to help, if they have their own agent, then despite, you know, how much sense what you might be saying has, they don't take heed because, you know, they got their own agent that they listen to. So I figured the best way to solve that was just to retire. And, in fact, we thought that we can have more of an impact. I would ask your listeners to consider OPEC as an example. OPEC is the Organization of Oil Exporting Countries. Those countries include Iran and Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. And there was a time in the early 70s before they found oil in the Middle East, that the international oil companies, the Exxons, the Mobils of the world, controlled over 85% of the oil reserves in the world. Now, oil is a natural resource, right? And after a while, after being exploited by these same oil companies, those countries came together and they formed OPEC. And in a few short years, from 1970 till today, there's been over a 75% shift in the economics of oil to the side of the oil-producing countries. And that phenomena made me think and consider, are there any resources that we have in our community where we could, if we created a shift, we could do like those same Arab countries did? Because what they did was build their entire country from the profits that they made from oil. So they built all their schools and all their hospitals and all their roads. And the guns that they buy to threaten the world from oil profits. And so my mentor, bless his soul, Al Wellington, who left us a couple of years ago, he was my inspiration. And we were listening actually to a white woman who's a senator out of Ohio, and she was talking about poor communities. And she made a statement that would forever indelibly be written in my mind when she said, there is no such thing as a poor community. Every community has resources. What you have to do is just figure out what are the resources that you have in your community and then you need to take control of those resources and use them to get the things that you need that you don't have in your community. And so, since I had been involved in sports for most of my adult professional life, I looked at our athletic talent as no different than oil, a natural resource. It's a renewable natural resource, meaning that somebody today had a baby boy who's going to grow up to be LeBron James. And somebody tomorrow going to have a baby boy going to grow up to be Kevin Durant. And it goes on in oil. So it's a renewable natural resource, unlike oil, which we're running out of. And so if we have this resource in our community, I then asked myself, why is our community so poor? And the answer jumped right back, because we have no control over the resource that we produce. And instead of it supporting our lifestyle and our standard of living, we've allowed our resource to be exploited by the UCLAs and the USCs and the Alabamas and the LSUs and of the world. And these same places, you know, they don't even admit black students, hardly, unless you play sports. I mean, the average black male population on the top 120 campuses in this country is less than 3%. But the average number of guys on the football team is 60%. And the average on the basketball teams is upwards of 75%. So I said, well, how can we be so misrepresented at the school generally, but dominate on the basketball or the football team, which, by the way, are the only two revenue-generating sports in college sports? The revenue from those two sports, basketball and football, at every one of these top 120 schools that comprise the SEC, the ACC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Big East, every one of them supports their entire athletic department, that is golf and tennis and swimming and water polo and baseball and track and field and volleyball and wrestling and all of these other sports. Most of these major colleges have anywhere from 17 to 19 other sports whose budgets come entirely from the revenue that they make off of the basketball and football program. And as the gentleman, his name slips me now, but he was the pioneer in the sneaker business. He signed Michael Jordan to his first contract with Nike. In his words, 99% of the stars are black. And so we have our kids making money for everybody else, but those same schools, they don't hire anybody that looks like the players to buy paper and pencils, if they don't use anybody that looks like the players to take out the trash, to cut the grass at the stadium, they don't use anybody that looks like the players when they spend money to build a new stadium or an arena. They don't use anybody who hardly looks like the players, even when they hire people to help the players. You know, there's this, I forget the acronym that they use, CHAMPS it is. This is the life skills program that they have on most of these campuses of these 120 schools. And the folk that run CHAMPS, they don't look like the kids who play on the basketball or football team. And so, you know, we decided, you know, that we could talk about it or we could do something about it. And since we know that we've been given a spirit of power and of a sound mind and not one of fear, then we decided to step out on faith to bring about the kind of change that must occur in the sports industry if we are to stop the wholesale exploitation of not just our young men, but our entire community. It is no different from colonization, where a country would come in and take all of the resources and leave nothing behind. That's what's happening. They come and take our boys who can hoop, but they don't take the other black boys who want to be doctors and lawyers and engineers and Indian chiefs. They just want the ones who they can make this money off of. And after getting them there, if you are aware of the University of Pennsylvania, they just recently did a study that examined all of this stuff at these top 120 colleges and universities to discover that there's been a long-standing and a persistent and a significant disparity in the graduation rates between our children and the other children who play. So when the NCAA says their kids go pro in something other than sports, they're not really talking about the basketball and the football team. They're talking about the track, the volleyball, the golf, the tennis, the water polo, and those kids. And those kids, when they graduate, then many of them go to work in the athletic department at the school they just played for, and they become the kids who are supposed to counsel and advise black boys from the inner city, from the country, from the suburbs, wherever they come from, on how to, achieve some level of success. It's insanity at its best. And we just have been and continue to watch it happen around us. My latest exposure in this industry involved representing, now the nonprofit that we have, we started a program where we go back down to the middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th grade student athletes. We don't know who's going to be the next LeBron, who's going to be the next Kobe. We don't care. We have all of them. I mean, what we want to make sure is that all of them develop whole, positioned, and prepared to live a life of purpose. And so we expose these kids to things that most would never be exposed to their entire life. In the 6th, 7th, 8th grade, it's a STEM-based curriculum, and we're changing who these kids think they are, who they think they can become, and bringing about the real change in the kids themselves, because if they change, then we don't have to change the system. And we just changed
let me jump in here real quick. Why did you take it back down to the middle school level instead of continuing to focus on the high school level?
Well, a number of reasons. I'm a lawyer by profession, so I'm not an expert on education. And so after doing a lot of study and research, educators agree that the younger you, or the earlier that you reach young kids, the more likely you're to have success in changing, you know, what might be the ultimate outcome. And so I said, well, these guys, they know they've been in the field as long as I've been in sports, and so I'm going to listen to them. And then from what I know about sports, I know high school kids, by the time a kid gets to high school, he thinks that he knows it all. His parents, if they bought into this, what we affectionately refer to as fried ice cream, the parents think they know it all. They think they've got this kid who's going to be the next best whatever. And so it's hard to get them to listen by the time they get into high school, which, by the way, makes them prime candidates to be taken advantage of, because the people on the other side know that they don't know, and they know they don't have a place to go to and turn to get real, unbiased information and knowledge. And so this system persists. So we figured we go back before any of them have separated themselves based on the athletic talent, so we can catch them and mold them. So as they start to separate, we still have contact with them, and we've made the kind of impact that cannot be defeated by, you know, the fact that they are now, you know, the star on the high school team. They still know where they can go to get help. And we've helped them, you know, not just with – we don't even focus on the athletic part of it, but we've helped them, again, you have the kind of faith and confidence in themselves as other than basketball or football players. I mean, we have a saying with the kids that if you work on your game, you make a living. You work on yourself, you could make a fortune, right? So we start teaching them that kind of stuff. You know, you can make excuses, you can make money, but you can't make excuses and money at the same time. And again, when they're in the sixth, seventh, eighth grade, they can listen to that. But again, by the time they get in the ninth, tenth, 11th grade, these colleges have started to reach out to them. They think they're on the way someplace, and they don't think that you know enough to really make a difference because, again, they've got these colleges and universities reaching out to them. So, you know, what do they need us for? What they're doing is working, they think. But, again, they soon come to find that it's not working, and then they suffer the consequences of, like anything else. I mean, it says it in the Bible, you know, that people perish from a lack of knowledge, and that's exactly what's happening to our young people and their families. They're perishing because of a lack of knowledge, and the earlier and the younger they are, the more open they seem to be to the knowledge, which is why we go back to that age. Now, because I've been involved in sports for the last 25, 30 years, then, you know, we have relationships with kids and their parents on all different levels. And so we do reach out and help kids on a case-by-case basis who are not part of our BOSS program. But the focus is on the middle school and high school kids. Like I was saying, we just helped a young man who was one of the top recruits, I think. I know he was a top 25 basketball player in the country, and he had issues with the NCAA that related to the amount of rent. I want your listeners to hear me carefully. The NCAA challenged the amount of rent that this kid's parents paid for the place that they lived at when he was in the 10th grade. They also challenged the amount of rent that this kid's parents paid when he was in the 11th grade and the 12th grade. And according to the NCAA, the difference in what they should have paid. Now, I don't know how the NCAA, they're not even in the real estate business. They don't even know how it works. And that was evident and clear from conversations that we had with them. They don't have a clue, but it's the NCAA, and in their ultimate wisdom, they came up with almost $100,000 worth of benefits that this kid had received. And if anybody knows the NCAA rules, the maximum benefit that they can negotiate with you in terms of still being able to play is $3,500. And so this kid was facing permanent exclusion even before he played a game at college. And they called us and we intervened and we made the best of a bad situation. But the point is simply, we don't have nothing to do with the rules that they set that govern our behavior and behavior of our children. I mean, there's no other organization or entity in the world that I know of that can tell me how much I should have paid for rent. I just don't know. Exactly. I mean, I don't even know anybody where it's even relevant how much I paid for rent beyond the NCAA. And so, again, that's just one example. I mean, they go all the way down to the high school level. We've represented some kids, because they got every state got a whole body of law about transfers and eligibility, and our children are faced with these rules, and we don't know what they mean. We don't really know about the rules until the rules are being applied to us. And once they become applied to us, it's too late. We don't know the rules in advance in order to conduct our affairs, and that's one of the benefits of organizations like what Mike is doing here with Parents Coaching Parents, is to try to share the knowledge before you get into the situation. Because, again, once you get in, then you're in. And, the NCAA, most of these high school organizations, how they operate, again, is unlike any organization in the world. They don't publish their decisions. They don't rely on precedent like courts do. And so our children and their families have been and continue to be subject to the whims of individuals, because the NCAA is just an organization. They're people who work for the NCAA. So these people, the same kind of person who would get on the airplane and talk about what they're getting ready to do to Shabazz Muhammad from UCLA, is the same kind of kid making decisions on other kids. And they don't make the mistake that they did in the Shabazz case, where they actually tell total strangers how they're going to get this kid. But the fact of the matter remains that and the courts have found that the NCAA has a total disregard for the truth. That's what the courts, when the courts get involved and they examine what the NCAA does, but yet we put our kids in the trust and the care of an organization that has proven on all kind of levels that the only thing they're concerned about is money, making money. And so that's got to change. And so we've fallen on the sword, so to speak, in terms of, I could make a lot more money representing players than I could trying to help the 99% who don't go pro. But we have to do this. Somebody's got to do it. We're positioned and equipped to do it, and so we've taken on that challenge.
I fully understand what you're saying. Yeah, and, you touched on so much just now, and I hope those of you that's out there that's listening, it sparked a question in your mind, it sparked a piece of conversation to join in on this conversation this evening. Something that, and I'm looking at a number of calls up here, but, something that you touched upon when you mentioned about the Parents Coach Parents Network and your nonprofit organization. You know, we as an organization, or we as a collective group, should be part of that voice that challenges some of the things that NCAA attempts to do on a regular basis. And the only way we're going to be able to challenge it, just like you mentioned previously, is just through us working with and through each other, working collectively, working, having that, as you so often say, that first follower to get up and start the movement going. And then once we get that movement going, then we'll have a better success rate as far as our young folks getting into school. Hey, Evan, what we're going to do, we're going to step away for a brief moment, take a little short break. Folks, if you want to call in when we come back, you can reach us at 917-889-8095. We're going to step away for a second, come right back, and finish up our great conversation with Mr. Everett Glenn from the National Sports Authority. And I forgot about the other educational and leadership program as well that he has out there, that hopefully he'll be able to mention a little bit more about that when we come back. So we'll be right back, folks. Just stay tuned, and we'll be rejoining you here shortly.
talk and then just work hard for the teachers. They might be showing love and the family and the teachers. I'm only teaching. Just trying to spread knowledge and the knowledge opportunities that you can follow when you get to college. I need to fall in the pool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart moves. That's how I do.
Once again, that was my man, Mr. Keith Wright. He's making smart cool. He's making smart cool. Well, we've had a great conversation this evening with Attorney Everett Glenn, and he shared some great insight with us and some things that hopefully it got a few of us thinking about what's going on out there with our children and how can we best serve our children and how can we best be the biggest advocate for our children's success. And if you haven't thought about those things while we've been talking and listening to this great dialogue from this mastermind, then I'm hoping, folks, that somewhere along the line the light will come on and it will shine, it will illuminate your way and make sure that you understand that it's all about what we need to do to provide that service. Well, we're going to let Mr. Glenn rejoin us, and we're going to get back into this conversation. And, again, if you want to call in or join in on the conversation, you can reach us at 917-889-8095. 917-889-8095. We're on the line with Mr. Attorney Everett Glenn, CEO and founder of National Sports Authority. Couple other great programs that he has out there. Once you call in, hit option one and let me know that you want to join the conversation. Well, let me check and see if our guest is still with us. Everett, you still there?
Yes, I am. Yep, and I wanted to pick up where we left off before the commercial break. You had talked about challenging the system and some of these things that are happening to our children. And I would just suggest to your listeners that all of them probably have heard of the Ray Rice situation, right?
Exactly.
And Ray Rice, that case represented, according to media reports, I don't know, but according to media reports, that was the 56th time, 5-6, that was the 56th time in 6 years that an NFL player had been arrested or charged, not convicted, but 56 arrests for domestic violence in 6 years. Okay, so that's like that's not a regular occurrence. 56 in 6 years is less than 10 a year. Last year, there were 77,000 calls to the domestic violence hotline. 77,000 calls in a single year, but the NFL averages 10 cases per year. So what that tells me is that domestic violence is not an NFL problem. That's a problem that we have in society if you get 77,000 calls in 1 year. However, the Organization of Women now, the National Organization of Women, they saw an opportunity because of the high-profile nature of the Ray Rice case to promote their agenda. And so they jumped into the conversation demanding that Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, resign because of how he handled the Ray Rice case, which again was the 56th case in his 6-year term. And they made domestic violence, they made Ray Rice the face of domestic violence, and they held the NFL hostage, even though, again, that's a societal problem. That's not an NFL problem. But because of the fact that they came together and organized these women, they got the NFL to write them a $5 million check to be used to address domestic violence generally. So if a group of women who don't have nothing to do with football can pressure the league to write them a $5 million check because of 56 cases that have happened over 6 years, then what should we be able to do? What kind of pressure should we be able to put on the NCAA? Because the NCAA is failing to graduate two-thirds of our kids.
So true.
What pressure should we be able to put on the NFL? They're building stadiums to exhibit the talent of teams that are 80% black across the board without any black contractor participation. So we're just so scared and frightened by what they will think about us if we stand up. We just keep sitting down. And we watch these other organizations stand up. Nothing negative happened to the National Organization of Women. They posted on their website for 2 weeks, hashtag resign Goodell. It was still up there 2 weeks after he gave them $5 million. And we sit back and we pontificate ad nauseum on Facebook and all these other social media outlets about Black Lives Matter. Well, if they matter, then why don't we stand up and prove it? We're trying to convince white folk that Black Lives Matter. But we wouldn't have to convince them if what we did in our own community with each other demonstrated that we believe that Black Lives Matter. I mean, if Black Lives Matter, how can we sit back silently and watch the NCAA exploit our boys and don't say nothing? I mean, if Black Lives Matter, how can we sit back and allow them to change the rules in terms of affirmative action and this sort of stuff so the result is the only black boys on campus play sports? I mean, if Black Lives Matter. If Black Lives Matter, how can the San Francisco 49ers, a team that's 85% black, build a $2 billion stadium with less than 1% black and other minorities participating in that project in a community that's 60% minority? If Black Lives Matter to black people. So, I mean, again, so we got to, I mean, God gave us a spirit of power and of a sound man, but we act like we're afraid. Because, again, we just talk about what could be and should be, but we're not willing to do what is necessary to make it happen. And in fact, as an example, this family that we just helped, one of the first things that we said to them from the beginning is, once we get through this process, then you have to let other people know what they have done to you. And what they did to them, the process of being cleared in terms of your amateur status, there is no timetable to that process. These people had been dealing with the NCAA since July of this year. And here we are in December, and there's still been no determination. And so what, you know, the school that I won't mention comes up with, you know, all of a sudden is that they've had a conversation with the NCAA, and we could, if we just accept this punishment, then we can move on because the way the system is, it'll be the rest of the year before we get any resolution from the NCAA. So in other words, to your listeners, what this school came to these parents and told them is if you waive your constitutional rights, if you waive your constitutional rights to confront your accuser, if you waive your constitutional right to due process, if you waive your constitutional right to equal protection of the law, then your son can play next week if you waive all of those rights. And they waived them because, and not only did they waive them, and I understand the decision to do so because they want their kid to play and they put all of their marbles in this bag called their son. But what they said they would do is let other people know what they have done. But as soon as the ink dried and their son was going to be able to play, they say they don't want to say nothing to nobody. They don't want, they believe that if they tell people what happened to them, that somehow the NCAA is going to punish their son. They've already punished him. and so in this country, we have what they call double jeopardy. They can't punish you no more. But they are afraid to say anything about, now, during the process, they complained about racism and all kinds of stuff that was evidence in the position that the NCAA was taking. But now that it's been settled, you know, to their satisfaction because their son going to be on the court, they don't want to say nothing to nobody. They don't want to upset the NCAA. So that's why they keep doing it. Because, and another young lady we helped a couple of years ago, she was the freshman female track athlete of the year in the Southeast Conference. And she transferred from her school to USC. And Tennessee, you know, Title IX was enacted to protect women and to create equal opportunity for women. But at the University of Tennessee, we found out that the women violate Title IX. That is, the woman's athletic director instituted a rule that violated the rule that was enacted to protect women, if that's clear. And again, we said we will help you, but what we want you to do is we want you to stand up and let people know what has happened to you. And once she was cleared, she didn't want to say nothing to nobody. It's almost like, you know, I'm a strong Christian. My faith is everything to me. And I know that the reason that we have testimonies, that we go through stuff, is to share the fact that we went through it and we came out on the other side to give hope to people still in the middle of a similar situation. So imagine what would happen if we never told people what we made it through. And that's what's happening in sports now. People don't want to tell their testimony. And therefore, they're going to continue to do for other people stuff that could have been stopped if we would just stand up and be strong and know that that there's nothing that they can do to hurt you if you're just telling the truth about what happened. And they're relying upon your fear and your belief that somehow they're superior to us to just be satisfied that you get what you're looking for, and we don't really care about our brothers and sisters. And if black lives truly matter, we should be more concerned about each other than we are.
You know, and that's real. That's some real deep stuff there that you just shared with us. And, you know, I wish more folks would think that way. You know, I truly believe that life would be a whole lot easier if more of us had that same mindset instead of running around intimidated,
Mike,
instead of running
it,
around
it,
shaking.
In the Bible, Mike, all of us have a spirit of power and of sound mind. But, you know, we have to believe that, and too many of us don't believe. We go to church every Sunday, we listen to tapes, and we do all of this stuff, but we don't believe what God said. Again, he says in his word, I give you a spirit of power and a sound mind, not of fear. So if that's what we've been given, why are we running around acting afraid of situations that we have already defeated? So we don't have nobody to blame but ourselves. I mean, for sure, there's bias and there's prejudice in this world. That's not ever going to go away. But we don't have to worry about bias and prejudice if we weren't biased and prejudiced towards each other. I mean, it started all the way back in the day, you know, from slave time, light-skinned blacks, dark-skinned blacks, you know, fat, slim, tall, short, every difference that they could come up between us, they exploited those differences. And, you know, so light-skinned girls don't like dark-skinned girls and all kind of craziness. And that stuff has just spilled over into our everyday behavior. So the white man's ice is colder. So, you know, we can say Black Lives Matter and we can protest killing of unarmed black men. As soon as we get $5, we run to the other side and ask for help. And I'm not trying to judge nobody in whatever decisions you make. You know, those are your decisions to make. But from where I'm sitting, you know, again, I was the pioneer, not Lee Steinberg, not Drew Rosenhaus, not Tom Condon, not Arne Tellem. I was the pioneer. Okay, so you don't have to be Jewish to be the pioneer. You don't have to be Jewish to have the answers. You know, so, but again, we have these prejudices and these biases in our own community, and we have the nerve to challenge the prejudices and biases that they have about us, many of which are based upon what they see us do. Okay, so if we didn't do what we do, then we could stop the biases and the prejudices. They know we don't come together to support anything black. They know that. Otherwise, they wouldn't take the liberty to challenge what they challenge if they thought the response would be a uniform, unified response. If we responded like we do to the death of an unarmed black man to the hands of the community, the same way when we discover that 60% of our kids are not getting degrees, then our kids will start getting degrees, because what they've done in response to one man being killed at the arms of the hands of the police is they've protested all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you get a response. So where is the protest to the 60% failure rate of our kids? Where is that? Where is the protest to what Sports Illustrated reported 10 years ago, that 80% of football players will be bankrupt, unemployed, and divorced within 5 years of retirement, and in NBA, or 3 years, and NBA players will suffer the same fate within 5 years? Where is the protest? I mean, how can we sit back and let them talk about Allen Iverson going broke, but CAA is totally absolved and they represented Allen Iverson?
Exactly, exactly.
Antoine Walker was represented by, I forget the boy, out of Mark Berlestein out of Chicago. You mean to tell me he didn't have nothing to do with this man going through $200 million. If he didn't, what was he doing for him? In fact, Bertelsmann put in a claim for fees in Antoine's bankruptcy. And they don't care. I mean, and they turn around and say, well, you know, it was Allen Iverson's fault or it was Antoine Walker's fault. They convinced them that it was their own fault. But, I mean, as a lawyer, one of the ways we learn early on to avoid any kind of issue with a client is if the client is not following your advice, then you end the relationship with the client because that's just trouble waiting to happen. And so if the CAAs and the IMGs and the Octagons and all these folk of the world are saying they're not following our advice and they're just doing their own thing or they're listening to their homies and all this other kind of stuff, then why are they continuing to represent these guys? Why don't they end their relationship with them? Well, because even a broke Allen Iverson can influence a black boy coming up because all he know about Iverson is that he the best little guy that ever played a game. And so yep. If you represented Allen Iverson, you can help me. They tell him, well, like, we ain't responsible for him going broke. He wouldn't listen. Well, if he didn't listen, why'd you keep representing him till he didn't have no more money? It's mm-hmm. crazy what we're allowing to happen. But the end is near, okay? The change is coming. And we're not going to give up until, because it's just right. It's just right and it's just fair that this thing go down different than it's been going down. I got a friend, a Jewish friend that I played college basketball with, right? And he's prominent. He's a prominent Jew. And he's prominent in the Maccabee Games, which is the Jewish Olympics. And I asked him recently, what would Jewish people do if 60% of their kids didn't graduate from college after being used to support the entire athletic department of the school? He said they would shut down the school.
Wow.
Wouldn't be no more sports until figured out how to fix this. Okay. So this is what he told me. Now, this is a guy that I showered with, right? So I seen him naked. He seen me naked. So we was friends, right? We friends. And I ain't mad at him. And that's why I asked him, because I just wanted to know, what would Jews do if this was happening to Jewish kids? What would they do if it was 80% of them kids and made hundreds of millions and tens of billions of dollars and wind up broke? What would Jews do? Man, he said we would stop it. It wouldn't persist. As soon as we found out about it, we would come together and we would deal with it and we would take whatever measures. He almost sounded like Malcolm X, you know. He said by any means necessary, they would put an end to it. So what is our problem? Why haven't we come together for our own good in the best interest of our children to deal with a situation? And, you know, if we talk about Black Lives Matter, then we've got to stop the creation of walking dead. That is, kids who go through this whole system, don't come out with a degree, get babies that they can't take care of, get women who they have been less than manly towards, don't have the kind of skills and tools to maneuver in this world. And so now we got another generation coming up behind them of kids who don't even have, they don't know who their dad is because the dad, you know, hit it and moved on to the next one. And he don't have no money to take care of him, so he's not around. I mean, it's just, we're not even thinking about the real damage that's been done to our community from this system that we just sit back and watch.
So true. So true. All right, brother. Well, we're going to get ready to wrap this thing up. And I know that we've had some great information that you shared with us this evening. And I'm really and truly surprised that nobody wants to chime in on the conversation.
Well,
I think
that's all right.
Just,
I mean, if they direct them to our website, the website is www.ESP as in Paul, Eli. ESLI.org and join the effort. Join the effort. Join the struggle. Join the cause. Let's help create a better result for the thousands of our boys who don't even have a desire to go pro. They just want to get an education and move on and become productive. But the system is preventing them from doing it.
Exactly. Give us that website again and send it to me so I can post it up on our Facebook page as well.
It's www.espeli.org.
All right.
So get there by just going to www.nationalsportsauthority.org. Nationalsportsauthority.org. Either one of them will get you to the site. And we're here to help. We're here to help.
Understand that. We're here to help. We're here to help each other gain that level of success and that achievement that our children are searching for. Our children are actively pursuing.
Entitled to. They're entitled to it.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
They're entitled to it. At least that's what Jed Margolis told me.
Say again.
I said, that's what Jed Margolis said. If they was Jews, they're entitled to it. I mean, that's
okay.
What he told me. I mean, you know, yeah.
Gotcha. All right, sir. We're going to wind down here. We've been talking with Mr. Everett Glenn, Attorney Everett Glenn, National Sports Authority Education and Leadership Elite Program. And definitely, we're going to keep you in touch. We're looking forward to hearing from you again. The third Sunday of every month, you're going to bring us some new information. I know you got a few articles out there that you wrote for the Huffington Post and still continuing to share those great blogs here on our Parents Call the Parents Network Facebook page. And we're looking forward to talking about some of those stories as well.
Yep. And for those who are in Arizona, we are doing our sixth annual series of Super Bowl events. We're doing our one-day Business of Success Beyond Sports, or BOSS, for 300 kids in the Phoenix area. And then we're having the John Wooden Leadership Awards, where we celebrate the diversity of sports. We're recognizing Linda Alvarado, the owner of the Colorado Rockies, Martin Mayhew, the general manager of the Detroit Lions, Ray Anderson, who was formerly the highest-ranking black in the NFL, who is now the athletic director at Arizona State, and all-pro cornerback Charles Tillman from the Chicago Bears. So those who will be in Arizona for the Super Bowl, come by and join us and have some fun.
All right. We thank you, sir.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, that's what we'll be in touch. All right, folks. As always, we have some questions this evening. Press Network, we have Attorney Everett Glenn, and like I said, Everett always bring the heat. If he sounds a little bit too strong and too much for y'all, trust me, it's all. Excuse me, the third Sunday of the month, we'll have him back again. So if you get to the point where you have some questions from the previous show, please, by all means, please jump up and share your information with us. Share your thoughts with the rest of the listening audience. Here on the Parents Call the Parents Network, we are here with our model and as always, real fun. So until then, hey, you have a great evening and happy talk to you again next Sunday.